Hello and good evening. Welcome to our space today. It's Wednesday, so it's her reason for being day. And today we are having a special discussion just to look into the stigma associated with cervical cancer. But just to start us off, my name is Achieng Otieno from Being Africa. Being Africa is a platform to inform, inspire, and involve everyone in the fight against non-communicable diseases. And every Wednesday, we usually host this space, Her Reason for Being Day, where we discuss on various issues relating to women's health, particularly focusing on cervical cancer. So today's topic is going to is an interesting topic, because what we've learned over the years is that once a woman has been diagnosed with cervical cancer, they experience a lot of stigma, they experience a lot of rejection, they experience a lot of challenges that end up affecting their psychological health, and some end up terminating their lives prematurely. So this is a very sensitive topic, and it's a topic that really requires a lot of attention. And today's discussion is going to shed more light into what stigma is all about and how can we go about it. So before I preempt our speakers, allow me to invite Valerie just to take us through today's discussion. I'm looking forward to this discussion. It's a topic that has been requested, and it's a topic that keeps on coming whenever we have our discussions about cancer, about cervical cancer, or any other type of chronic condition. So today, we are privileged to have an opportunity to have just this discussion. So Valerie, allow me to invite you just to take us through this discussion. Karibu and welcome.
Thank you very much, Achieng, for that wonderful introduction. And good evening, everyone, and welcome to Horizon for Being Space. Achieng has already done much of the introduction. And today's topic is one that is going to be very much involving, and we encourage each and every person to give opinions, contributions, to share, you know, just I want to make it a free space for each and every person to be able to speak. And we'll focus on how we can shift perceptions and perspectives around cervical cancer to help beat the stigma associated with it. So welcome once again. Today, everyone is a guest here. Everyone is a panelist and everyone is a speaker. So, but Caleb will be giving me much company today. So welcome, Caleb, and just go ahead and introduce yourself. So Caleb, all the way from Togo, welcome.
Thank you very much, Valerie. Thank you very much, Achieng. Thank you very much, everyone, for being part of us this evening, or this morning or afternoon. That would depend on where you are and when you're listening to this space subsequently. My name is Caleb Ayong, and I lead the team at Vital Voices for Africa, VVA. Vital Voices for Africa is based in Togo, but has a continental focus. And our mission and vision is to amplify the voices, community voices, and raise awareness on sustainable development in the continent, building resilience for sustainable development in Africa. I'm excited to be here today and to share ideas and perspectives on how we can shift mentalities when it comes to stigma, especially stigmatization against cervical cancer patients. Thank you, Valerie.
Thank you, Caleb. Caleb has been a friend of the space for a very long time, and today here with us again and again. So welcome, and welcome everyone. So I think even as we begin, I just want Caleb to give us an overview, maybe from his own country, from Togo. What's the situation like in regards to cervical cancer? What's the prevalence? And, you know, what's the situation like?
All right. Thank you very much, Valerie. I would very much like to generalize my intervention today, because, yes, I am in Togo, but what happens in Togo happens, it's pretty much the same thing that happens in Ghana, which is nearby, in Benin, which is also nearby, and in all of West Africa, and I should say in most of Africa, and especially given that we're talking about stigmatization today, it's a general issue. Stigma is not stigma against the cervical cancer patients is not limited to Togo or to a particular country. It is a general issue. You asked about the prevalence rate of cervical cancer in Togo. I don't think I have the specific details for that, but what I know is that stigmatization does exist. I know also that the common problems that people face with relation to cervical cancer control, care, and prevention, all the problems associated with it across the world and across the continent also exist. They are very prominent here in Togo. So maybe instead of talking much about the prevalence, something I don't think I'm quite qualified to look into, I should rather just share my point of view, if you don't mind, Valerie, on what I think about the cervical cancer situation, especially with terms of stigmatization. And I would like to do what I term Africanize. I would like to Africanize my intervention today, because, like I said, it's a general problem that concerns us all. Is that okay, Valerie?
Yes, that's very much okay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. So today we're talking about cervical cancer, and we are focusing our attention particularly on changing perceptions and perspectives to beat stigma. First of all, what is stigma? And if you talk about stigma, we would be referring to people seeing you in a negative way, maybe because of something you're undergoing or some condition that befalls you. And with stigma, stigma is very much linked to, or stigma very easily leads to discrimination, which is the way someone treats you, or when someone treats you in a negative way because of what you're undergoing, or because of a situation that befalls you. And you would see that if we relate this to our theme for today, changing perceptions and perspectives to beat stigma with relation to cervical cancer, we'll be talking about stigma against cervical cancer patients. Now, we all know that cervical cancer poses a significant health challenge, not only in Africa, but in many parts of the world. And today we are looking at perceptions and perspectives to beat this stigma related to cervical cancer. Before we discuss this, it is important to first of all bring to perspective one major challenge that comes naturally when dealing with cervical cancer. And towards the end, I'll come back to talk about this particular challenge and why it is important. Now, Valerie, every day, every Wednesday, we get to this platform and we talk about cancer. We talk about the importance of cancer screening. Every time there's talk of cervical cancer, experts always say, the best way to prevent cancer or cervical cancer is to go for early screening, because early diagnosis can be treated, can lead to treatment, and then you are saved from the problem. But I want to ask us a question today. What happens during cervical cancer screening. Now, the woman lies on her back, bends her knees, places her feet in supports, two supports placed at the end of each end of the table where she's going to be examined. In short, I'm just trying to use a non-graphical approach to basically explain that during a cervical cancer screening, a woman basically opens up her vagina to a health professional, a healthcare professional. And can you imagine what will be running through that the mind of this woman when she has to open up herself like this during a screening process? And can you imagine if this healthcare professional is a man? Now, the reason I brought this up is so we acknowledge the fact that cervical cancer in itself, screening, control, care, whatever we do, cervical cancer by default is not an easy thing for a woman to undergo. Cervical cancer screening, I mean to say. It's not an easy thing for a woman to undergo. And I think one very important thing that we need to achieve in this world is normalize cervical cancer screening across the continent. I should even say across the globe. When we would have succeeded to make women become comfortable with the cervical cancer screening process, we would have achieved a huge milestone. We can have all the cervical cancer screening services and facilities brought to every woman in Africa. We can make it as affordable as possible. We can create an ideal Africa for cervical cancer control. But if the women themselves are not comfortable undergoing the process because of what it entails, exposing themselves to healthcare professionals, and you know all the process of undergoing the screening with all the utensils, the materials that are entailed, we will still have many women not going in for screening. And then cervical cancer will still be prominent, will still be rampant. And of course, stigmatization will remain present and it will be even more prominent. Now, what I just said is, it will make a lot of sense if we're in an ideal continent. And what do I mean by an ideal continent? A continent where we're able to get every woman comfortable undergoing cervical cancer screening. And of course, an ideal continent will also mean that we bring the screening services to every woman in Africa, bringing it closer to them, making it affordable to them. That would be an ideal continent. Unfortunately, we are not in this ideal continent. It would not be easy. That first challenge that a woman has to expose herself during cervical cancer screening is always going to be there. It is not likely that we are going to be able to bring screening services to every woman and make them affordable for every woman anytime soon. So unfortunately, we are not going to have an ideal continent anytime soon. And as such, stigmatization of cervical cancer patients will unfortunately continue to persist in many African societies. This is a complex issue, and we cannot talk about changing perception without identifying some underlying reasons for stigmatization. Valerie, we said this was going to be an interactive session, and we are going to have people come in. So I don't know if I should just continue and then we can bring in our comments as we proceed, or you want others to jump in now? Can I just continue?
You can just
continue. I want to ensure. Okay, great. Thank you. I just wanted to ensure that I'm not going too fast, and I wanted to make sure that we are at the same pace, and others also have a chance to come in if they have comments to make. So I'll just go ahead. So I was saying that yes, stigmatization is a complex issue, and we cannot talk about changing our perception without identifying some underlying reasons for the stigmatization. Once we can identify them, then we can effectively deal with these misconceptions and hopefully make make strides, make real efforts, you know, to bring down stigma. The first of these underlying reasons for stigmatization is the obvious misconception and lack of knowledge that people have of cervical cancer. I don't know the experts we have here, but I'm sure most of us, or you all, will agree with me that the HPV, the human papilloma virus, which is a primary cause of cervical cancer, is quite often confused with cervical cancer itself. And because of this, people should associate HPV with promiscuity, sexual promiscuity, infidelity, or people prostitution, you know, risky sexual behavior, all of that. And you don't want to be associated, naturally, women don't want to be associated with all of that. So there is that natural tendency, because of such misconceptions, to have stigmatization against cervical cancer patients. And then, of course, like I said, when people don't understand fully the disease, they begin to act judgmental. Not only do they have the tendency to associate your cervical cancer with promiscuity and risky sexual behavior, they also tend to become judgmental. They want to now judge you for the conception they have of you, the false conception they have of you, and that makes them judge you, unfortunately, have claims or have conceptions of things that you not necessarily are, or of things that are not necessarily true of you. So that is one thing. Another one is the cultural and gender norms. We know that women in Africa, well, it might not be the same in the Western world, but in Africa, childbirth is very important. And because cervical cancer affects the reproductive system, this can amplify stigma, because traditional gender roles and societal expectations require that a woman bears children. But she doesn't just bear children anyhow, she bears children for her husband. Those are our traditional African values. And then you imagine now, when people start, if for some reason you cannot reproduce because of cervical cancer, and you happen to stay without being able to reproduce, you can imagine the stigma that can come with this. The whole world wants you to give birth to a baby. You cannot give birth to a baby. There's a lot of pressure on you, and with that pressure comes stigmatization. With that pressure also comes blaming and shaming, because people would mistakenly believe that your cervical cancer or whatever caused you to not be able to give birth was purely caused by a sexual behavior. And you can imagine the trauma that this can cause women. Sometimes people also stigmatize against cervical cancer patients because they do not understand how cervical cancer is transmitted. Sometimes it's not because they are afraid, or sometimes it's not because they see you in a bad way. It's not because they see you as promiscuous. It's not because people see you as engaging in risky behavior or being a prostitute or things like that. Sometimes people just fear that coming close to you would make them also contract cervical cancer. So there was this misconception that getting close to a cervical cancer patient can put you at risk of contracting cervical cancer, even though this is not how the disease spreads. That's another reason why people stigmatize cervical cancer patients. And then, of course, I talked a while ago about promiscuity. Women with cervical cancer, sometimes people will assume that they are promiscuous, and the women themselves could feel guilty, You know, it's not the society can push them to even feel guilty for themselves, to feel guilty themselves. When the society starts talking a lot and says all sorts of negative things about you, sometimes you could even tend to feel that guilt and blame yourself, you know, for what is happening. And this is also very dangerous. That's another kind of stigma that can be very, very disastrous. Societal judgment and all of that. And then another type of discrimination I'll talk about here is discrimination from the people who are supposed to give you the best care, the best support possible, healthcare workers. Unfortunately, some of them are not helping, do not help matters when it comes to dealing with cervical cancer patients. Some of them talk badly or talk poorly to these patients. Some of them approach the patients, you know, in a way that makes the patients feel hated or feel traumatized. You know, that is something very worrying. As healthcare professionals, they're supposed to provide the best care and support for cervical cancer patients. Unfortunately, some of them do even worse and create a lot more damage because of their unprofessional behaviors towards cervical cancer patients. And then, of course, there is a social ties. Sometimes the stigma comes just by imagining how friends, family members, and colleagues will perceive diagnosis, a cervical cancer diagnosis, you know. And this is even, sometimes I even call it self-stigma. The person himself gets so worried about what the community will think of, or the lady will get so worried about what the community thinks of her, and then becomes a huge problem. Now, I started by laying a universal challenge, the invasive nature of cervical cancer screening and control. When a woman has to undergo cervical cancer screening and treatment and control, the fact that she has to expose herself and all of that, that's a general concern that I lead. And then I've talked about several triggers to stigma. But added to this, these triggers, or added to these challenges, are some barriers. Let's not forget that cervical cancer screening is not very available. So you can imagine, first, there is that challenge, that physical challenge of going to open up yourself to someone for a screening. And then there are all the other aspects I have just enumerated here and now that, you know, can really cause people, women, you know, to maybe shy away from screening. Added to all of these, there are barriers to the screening services themselves. It is a known fact that in Africa there is poor access to screening services. That's a fact. We are doing a lot to try to improve this, but a lot more needs to be done. In Africa, there is adequate infrastructure, there are limited healthcare facilities, and then there are geographical distances that hinder women from getting screened of cervical cancer. These are aspects that further complicate screening. And of course, when I talk about screening, it's not only screening, it's also other cervical cancer care, control, and even treatment. These barriers go same. Same for whether it's screening, whether it's treatment, whether it's care and control. Now, we talked already about cervical cancer knowledge. People have lots of misconceptions about cervical cancer. This plays a crucial role. And the women, some women themselves know very little about the cervical cancer. You know, that's also another serious barrier that we need to take into consideration. When women do not know much about cervical cancer and how damaging it can be, and then there is the added added problem of going through all the other things I've highlighted above, it becomes a real problem. And you can see that once stigma steps in, it becomes even more fatal. I also talked about cultural beliefs, misconceptions that are associated with cancer that may prevent women from participating in screening programs. I want you to see the pattern I'm taking, the difficulties women have, and then the challenges that come added to these difficulties that come naturally. I talked a while ago about healthcare providers who face challenges. They face challenges related to skills, they face challenges related to equipment, they face challenges related to supplies. Some health providers do not even have up-to-date, I will not say the most appropriate, maybe I should say the most up-to-date training to perform effective screening. And then sometimes shortages of screening tools can further exacerbate the problem or the situation. Sometimes it is because there is not enough staff to do these screenings. So you can see there is a lot and a lot and a lot that happens with cervical cancer. And then you can imagine that in all of these, when all of this happen and prevent a woman from having early diagnosis, the cancer evolves, becomes fatal or becomes serious, and then all the stigma comes in again. So I've just been trying to lay out some of the problems. I started with the natural problem, and then I continued with how certain conditions lead to women getting really drained into the cervical cancer problem and end up finding themselves in a very messy situation where they can barely take care of themselves, and worst of all, they can barely get any support from the community. Now, what can be done?
Caleb, before maybe you proceed, yes. I can see Dr. Riri is here. And
yes.
I'm sure he'd like to comment about the first part of the challenges you've mentioned, and maybe anyone else would like to comment before maybe you proceed to coming up with the solutions. If I may also add, before Dr. comes in, there's also the aspect of how the symptoms present themselves, especially maybe if it's an advanced stage, or maybe there could be some unwanted smell, there could be abnormal bleeding as well. So maybe even those can also lead to stigma, and most especially self-stigma. So
exactly.
Welcome, Dr. Riri.
Good evening, everyone. You can hear me?
Yes, yes.
One, I would like to concur with Caleb. The cervical cancer has a lot of stigma when it comes to screening. And the earlier podcast we have had with many people, the worst thing about cervical cancer is it doesn't have symptoms until it is too late. By the time the women have symptoms, it's a bit too late. It's the later stages. But the biggest stigmas we have on, let me start at screening, is one, availability. It's a bit expensive because not everyone will be able to afford $2,000 for a pap smear. So it's every 2 years. And if you look, as I have said many times, cervical cancer is the number one killer of women in non-infectious diseases. Meaning it kills women more than diabetes, heart attack. So it's at least once every 2 years, a woman should be able to do a pap smear if you're not in the high risk areas. Two, the other challenges we get is most of the low incomes and low middle incomes people, the first person they see in a hospital is a clinical officer. And if you go to a public hospital, the clinical officer room does not even have an examination table. It's just a table and a chair. So the clinical officer does not have the intention to examine. And as I have said, majority of patients who come with early cervical cancer does not have symptoms. So the person seeing the patient has to have a high suspicious index. You have to kind of look for it before the patient tells you the symptoms. The third thing is it's expensive to treat and it's very intrusive because you're telling the patients to expose themselves. It's a bit very intrusive. There is a self-test examination, the HPV DNA, but it is 8,800. Surely, very few people will afford 8,800 every 2 years. So when it comes to the symptoms, most of the symptoms are post-intimacy bleeding. And now most of the spouses and the partners will kind of shun this patient off because every time they are intimate, there's some bleeding. And sometimes it comes with a discharge, and in advanced stage, there's a very offensive smell. In fact, for a professional, they will know there's a cervical cancer patient where they enter the ward because of the smell. But by the time they get that smell, it's already on the later stages. So the way we could try to help is by educating for screening, early screening. One of the biggest problem I have is the screening that is advocated by WHO. The visualization and acetic acid by some trained individuals. For you to be trained to visualize and acetic acid, which is a very good way and very effective way of examining cervical cancer patients in the ward that would be cheap and free, they have to have an equipment called a colposcopy, which hospitals do not have. And the nurse or the doctor or the clinical officer doing the examination has to be trained for at least 6 months, not 2 weeks. They cannot be able to get what is wrong with the patient for training for 2 weeks. So I think we need to tailor things like this have to happen a lot for us to tailor policies to be able to help our fellow citizens. So that's what I would add from what Caleb has said. But we need to have, I have said over and over and over, screening, screening, screening will help us a lot. Countries like Australia have been able to almost eliminate cervical cancer. Number two, we have to advocate for vaccines, 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 and go beyond religious belief against anti-vaccinators. Even if everyone has a right, we need to educate people to see the advantages of vaccines. Over to you, Valerie.
Thank you very much, Dr. And I definitely agree with you, especially on focusing majorly on the importance of vaccines. As you know, even if we tell people maybe it's free for children for 10 to 14 years, you know, people don't go for things because they are free. There has to be a very good reason for them to go for it. So I think even as advocates, as people interact with people in the community, we really have a huge role to play. And also healthcare professionals, if this could be done even when people just come for normal checkups, they just come to treat other diseases, or women come for ANC visits and you know, any other hospital visits, it's also important to relay this information to each and every person. So yeah, thank you very much. Caleb, that was a step you wanted also to mention, so please go ahead.
All right. Thank you very much, Valerie. And I also want to thank Dr. David for bringing in some of these other aspects that I didn't even take into consideration. I mean, I'm not a medical doctor. I've not been in a clinician's office when a woman comes for cervical cancer. So, you know, these are certain things that they as medical professionals would see and deal with directly that some of us do not have the privilege to be part of. So I thank you very much for bringing in this expert-specific view while I also look at the societal, the society's view, of course, because today we're looking at how to change our perspectives, the perceptions and perspectives to beat stigma. And you would agree all with me that that's a societal issue. So that's an issue of societal concern. Thank you very much, Dr. David. So I was asking the question, and if we add to all what Dr. David has said, I think he really touched on some of the issues I was going to raise now. What can be done? How can the stigma surrounding women and cervical cancer be tackled? Women with cervical cancer, how can this be tackled? Of course, a holistic approach to cancer care is needed. Dr. David talked about governments and healthcare institutions providing more adequate solutions, making them more affordable. But I think before getting into all of that, even this government and healthcare institutions should question themselves why women are reluctant to seek care and how they can support these women through treatment and beyond. And of course, you remember that we talked about cervical cancer being very intrusive and invading what I'll put in quotes, a woman's privacy. So it is not enough to provide cervical cancer screening facilities. If women do not show up out of fear of being shamed by the community, you know, but I guess what I'm trying to say is it is not enough to provide these facilities. It is not enough to just make them available. We have to ensure that women show up and benefit from these services without the stigma that the community tends to undertake to show towards these women. And Dr. David talked about self-testing kits, which could be a game changer. I agree with you so much. This is really important, and maybe this is an opportunity for us to advocate seriously for African governments, advocate seriously with funders, you know, the big organizations that really care about these issues. Maybe this is something you should invest in, first of all, making these kits available, invest in creating a safe space where they can be used, they can be used at home. Even at home, there are certain things to take into consideration, and we can invest in making sure that these things are taken are provided for women. We should also invest in training on how to use gadgets, these kits, self-testing kits. When I talk about training, what do I mean? We can organize massive campaigns that will make every woman know how to use these kits. I'll give an example. Around the world, I know that there was a serious campaign I want to believe this happened in Kenya and other countries, but there's always been a rollback malaria program. And they talked so much about malaria across Africa, and people, it became clear to so many people that if you want to avoid malaria, you must clear your bushes, you must avoid, you know, you must close your windows during a certain time of the evening, you must clear up standing water, you must do this, you must sleep under a protected mosquito bed net. These were campaigns that were pushed over and over and over, and we see that today everyone knows about malaria. We should do things like this, especially if we identify that self-testing kits would ensure that many more women are comfortable testing themselves. Because don't forget, the first problem is some women, and it is the first thing I mentioned in the first place, not everybody is comfortable going to get that exposed for a cancer screening, cervical cancer screening. So if we can make it easier for people to be able to do this test, if we can make it more private, and we can make it, we can invest in the technology, in the affordability, in the availability, in the usability of these products, I think that it would make a huge difference, because we would reduce cervical cancer in the first place. We would significantly reduce the prevalence of cervical cancer, and they will not even be talking about stigma in the first place. So I think this is very important. And then the next thing I'll talk about is sensitization. Sensitization is key, and Dr. David talked about it. We must sensitize our populations. People do stigmatize because there is a lot of misconception about cervical cancer. If we can make the population know the truth and the reality about cervical cancer, we would have done a great deal of work and would have made quite some progress in reducing the stigma. The first thing, you know, I give a series of myths about cervical cancer. We must work to turn the tide on misconceptions and lack of knowledge. We must sensitize the population, for example, to know that being diagnosed with the HPV, the virus that causes cervical cancer, doesn't necessarily mean that a woman is promiscuous or has been engaging in risky sexual behavior. This is very, very important. We must make sure that our communities fully understand the disease so that they don't react with judgment or avoidance towards cervical cancer patients. And again, I talk about investing in campaigns that effectively sensitize the population. I think this is key. We might know these facts, and we might bring these facts out there, and we say it and say here, we may say it here and now. But we need to take this information to the various corners of the world, of the continent. We need to use community radio stations. We need to use the mediums, the media that people are versed with. I know in Kenya, there's a lot of use of social media amongst young people in Kenya and in Africa. We should exploit this and tell people and bring out the truth about this disease so that people do not have these misconceptions. We should go to the rural communities where access to the internet and social media is not very common. We can use community radio stations and TV stations. We can use community messengers. I don't know if this is common. I know in most African countries they have community messengers who go around, and they are very respected because they are sent by the traditional rulers. We can use all these mediums we have and pass the message significantly. Our sensitization should also take into consideration cultural norms, cultural and gender norms. I talked a while ago about women being childbearers, and maybe because cervical cancer is diagnosed and a woman cannot reproduce as a result. Instead of shunning this woman, we need to sensitize our population to be strong and to be knowledgeable enough to know that they are supposed to support this kind of women and not shun them. This is very important. And I think what I'm doing here is I'm trying to highlight key messages that we can. The major strategy to use is sensitization. But how what does our message look like? We should carry this message along. And then I think that our sensitization efforts must also target making communities understand that cervical cancer is not contracted through everyday interactions with patients. No, people need to know that when they have people with cervical cancer, they might be uncomfortable. It might be uncomfortable being close to these people, but that is the reason why they need your support the more. And you need to know that being close to them would not necessarily pass the disease to you. And again, I cannot stress enough the need to make our communities understand that women with cervical cancer are not necessarily promiscuous. This is very, very important. Our healthcare providers need more training on how to deal with cervical cancer patients. That is also very important. This is another area that we need to invest in and ensure that we have competent healthcare providers. Now, I'm going to conclude by saying that there is a better option to deal with this situation. Instead of trying to sometimes avoid the existing stigma, we can just break it. We can break the stigma altogether. And we can only break it, like I said, if there's adequate education, information, sensitization. Sensitization of the public, sensitization of our healthcare professionals, and open and frank discussions on sexual and reproductive health, open discussions on cervical cancer. The taboos surrounding cancer, we can limit them through awareness campaigns, and above all, we should let people understand that HPV is curable, HPV is treatable. We should do everything possible to invest in ensuring that testing kits are less invasive, more affordable, more user-friendly. These are key elements. When we do this, we limit cervical cancer in the first place, and we will not even have any to talk about discrimination here. Above all, cervical cancer is not a death sentence. It is treatable, it is not an infectious disease, and it is not a death sentence. If you diagnose it early, you can treat it. But to diagnose it early, we need to go for the screening, and we need to find a way to not be ashamed. We need to find a way to be more comfortable going for these screenings. So I think these are some of the things we need to seriously think about, and in so doing, we would go a long way as a society to help bring down stigma, the high rates of stigma we currently have with regards to cervical cancer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Caleb. So I can see Sabi's on. Would you like to add something, or do you have a question? Please go ahead.
I would like to concur with Caleb, and let's sensitize people on screening. And I always say everyone has HPV. Everyone has contacted HPV. It's not exception to promiscuity. There's a 10% of people who get it through non-sexual means. So let's sensitize on screening, and we will be good on everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Isab.
I have one question. This is to Dr. David. So you want to say, apart from having sexual contact, there's also other ways you can contract the disease. Which other ways are these? And then after I hear answers, maybe I can. Yeah, please.
Yeah, research has shown you can get it in the gym, you can get it in hotel bed sheets, you can get it in swimming pools. Very small percentage in swimming pool, especially the ones that are not chlorinated. but you can get it in bicycle seats for the gym, especially, and hotel rooms, especially the ones that are not well sanitized. Yeah. Hello?
I think I have found a new fear. at least I'm happy that we are having this conversation. And for me, I feel the conversations in terms of sensitization should begin at the screening level. You see how we normally have the AIDS post and pre-counseling. I believe that is something in cervical cancer, you know, medics and other professionals who counsel people can adapt. Because once you are able to talk to the patient about how they can, in terms of understanding the disease, how to go about it when they discover they have it, and how to live knowing that they don't have the disease, I think it's important that we have a counseling session. Even as it progresses, we could also, you know, talk to their families who their loved ones have been affected by this disease, because I understand cervical cancer may even affect your sexual engagement with your spouse. So it all begins with conversations, and I feel today is a moment of learning, unlearning and relearning some things about cancer, and specifically cervical cancer. Personally, I have never been interested in knowing particular details about cervical cancer, because the symptoms have never been familiar, so to speak. So I'm happy that this change is beginning with me, because I'm starting to now engage in conversations where I can learn more about cancer. Yeah, so I believe as we continue, I'll get to comment more.
Thank you, Sabi. I think I've also become a little bit more careful, especially when Dr. mentioned on gyms, hotel beds, swimming pools. And so the sensitization needs to be holistic, not only about cervical cancer, but also cervical health, since the cervix is a really sensitive area. And hygiene is going to be very, very much important. I don't know if Dr. would like to comment on the counseling part, the therapy part, before and after, just like it happens in HIV, if it's something that can be adopted.
I usually prefer if the counseling is done in antenatal, because majority of the women in Kenya end up in antenatal. So we can try, because we get most of the diagnosis of HIV as antenatal. As we are counseling for antenatal, we also counsel for cervical cancer. It's actually in the antenatal book. It's just that most nurses do not, they are more on HIV than cervical cancer, because HIV will affect the child. But it's something we can train our nurses and midwives to adapt and to counsel on cervical cancer screening, so that it can be as sensitized as HIV. So that's a very good point. Back to you, Valerie.
All right, thank you, Dr. And I don't know if anyone has heard about the ongoing research on how now urine samples can be used to test for cervical cancer, and I'm not sure how accurate that can be, but
that is not possible. Okay. Let me just stop you. Urine sample cannot. That is not possible. That's completely different systems. That is not possible.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. And also,
I'm actually looking forward, sorry, Ivan, to a day that will come where, you know, maybe some of us are so scared of foreign objects, So I'm looking forward to days when we will have progress as a country and also other continents and such, where we'll be screening cancer for cervix by using either urine or blood samples, just to cater for these people like me who who don't like foreign objects, because I believe it's something that looks like it's metal made, right, Daktari?
The pap smear is very intrusive because you have to use a speculum, which is usually put in the vagina, because you have to see the cervix. And then a brush is used to brush the cervix. And then that brush has cells. So the cells are put on a slide. And usually the pathologist reads the slides. And because pathologists in Kenya are few, the results usually come back after 2 weeks. So a pap smear is very intrusive. But as I said, for a more expensive fit, there is a HPV DNA, which is usually self-tested. The person can do HPV DNA is a bit easier. But a pap smear is 2,200, around there. HPV DNA is 8,800. And you can see the difference and the sensitivity. The ability of a pap smear to say you actually have a problem is around 50%, is not as good. So that's also another problem with the pap smear. So the HPV is superior, but it's more expensive. I hope I have answered your question.
Yeah, you have. I wanted to know of any other methods of kuipima apart from you know doing the insertion with some foreign stuff. Yeah.
Imagine no, because you have to. The cervix is inside there. We still don't have another method. And believe you me, a lot of research is going through it, but still we don't have another method. The only method that is there is just a pap smear and HPV DNA, which both include inserting things. I know it's very intrusive, but it's a bit unfortunate. So, Valerie?
Oh, yeah. So Caleb had also mentioned one of the contributors to stigma is also inaccessibility to treatment as well. And so these, I've seen it with several patients whom some of them we refer, some of them would just go for screening. After going for screening, then what next? They have no way to start treatment, either maybe when it's positive, when the results come out as positive, then they don't know how to proceed. Either the hospitals are full, NHIF maybe is taking long to get approved, and you know they are ready to get the treatment, and sometimes facilities may also fail us. So that also could lead to stigma and fear of, could be death as well, because you keep wondering, now I can't even get treatment. I had already volunteered and gone for screening. So what next after screening? So that could also bring lots of stigma and fear as well to even tell more people to go for screening or more people to go for screening as well. So I'm just wondering how that huge gap can be filled. If it's also possible for when someone gets screened, then they're able to start treatment immediately when they test positive.
Most of the time when you test positive for HPV, your body will actually fight the virus, unless you are a bit of the few who cannot. But before, when you have the virus, then you are followed closely. I always tell people, if they find you are HPV positive or you have something abnormal with the HPV, with the pap smear, look for a gynecologist oncologist. Don't look for obstetrician and gynecologist. I know we are few, but look for a gynecologist oncologist. They will be able to advise you better and follow you further. That's the best, because we'll be able to give you the appropriate treatment. Even for early cancers, they are available. Okay, we are a bit few, but we are there. So we'll be able to, we only deal with women with gynecological cancers. That means cancers of the ovary, the cervix, the uterus, the vagina, the vulva, like the women cancers. So even if we are few, we are not that overwhelmed. So just look for us. We'll be able to guide you depending on how much you have, what was diagnosed, and what level you are. I hope I answered that, Valerie. Back to you.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Sally, please go ahead and make your contribution.
Good evening and hello, everyone. I'm so excited today that we have gentlemen as our speakers for cervical cancer. It's not usually that way. If you talk cervical cancer, maybe people would have expected that women would be the ones talking. But I'm so happy that our men are also getting involved. And I hope that more and more men will talk about cervical cancer, because it's not just a woman affair, but all of us. So for me, I would just like to confirm what the two gentlemen have said, that all those things you have said, because I am a cervical cancer survivor. And I agree with Dr. Ri when you say that there are no symptoms at the beginning. I am someone living with HIV, and I had a compromised immune system. So when I did the pap smear, I was found to have some abnormal cells, as you call it. And when they checked, they found that I had actually had HPV for a while. And when the further test revealed that I was actually having cervical cancer stage 2, and that was in 2007, and I survived. So I just wish to encourage our listeners here this evening. And Sabi, don't get scared. It's something that you can, it's a bit uncomfortable, but it's manageable. It's not something to scare you. Because if you wait until the disease is there, then the consequences are going to be bad. So I just want to encourage people that cervical cancer is one of the cancers that can be eliminated from the face of the earth. If we do all these things, I know that the screening is embarrassing and all those things the gentlemen have talked about. But if you fear to open your legs during childbirth, then you can't get a baby. So if you want to eliminate cervical cancer, unfortunately, ladies, we have to open our legs. And I'm happy once again that the men are getting involved, and that we'll get more and more men talking about cervical cancer. Thank you and have a good evening.
Thank you, Sally, and thank you for always sharing your story and encouraging more people to also share. And you're also being very active in creating awareness. And Sally even goes as far as escorting people for screening. She texts you for screening and is there with you. And yeah, it's always nice. So I think we need such. And I can see our time is far much spent, and also I can't see any more hands, more requests, any questions as well for Caleb and Dr. here. Yeah, so if we do not have any further contributions from each and every person, we've already gotten very great insights, and what's remaining is to really take action. And, you know, we can actually eliminate cervical cancer. I'd also like to talk more about what Caleb said about these Thara campaigns. You really mentioned about malaria and the interventions. If you ask anyone about the interventions of malaria prevention and treatment, case management, and all that, then most people will really mention very fast. So I think if we normalize these conversations about cervical cancer, then it will get to where HIV, malaria is. And that's what we really want. And we've already started coming out, speaking to people about cervical cancer, about the vaccine, about a screening. And yeah, that's all we need to keep doing. So I'll give Caleb maybe to make final submissions and talk about maybe the future of sensitization, future of these campaigns that we really are talking about, and also mention some of the messages, how we can collaborate and come up with now the very, 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 very good messaging to get to the people. Maybe that's what we all need. So, Karibu, welcome, Caleb.
All right. Thank you very much once again, Valerie. Yes, first I would say that I'll join the other speakers to say I think cervical cancer we can do away with it, we can eliminate it, but it would take a lot of investment. It would need to be a priority for our governments, for donors, you know, it should be a priority. And I say it should be a priority not only because we need to invest in it, but because we can actually eliminate it. And what can be done? We've talked about the various actions that can be taken. I think that if we invest in making cervical cancer screening more friendly, less intrusive, that could really help in getting many more people, many more women across the continent screened. And once we can get many more women screened, that means that we can identify cervical cancer early in most cases, and the automatic result will be that we have less cases of the disease going to the advanced stage because they would have been treated at the basic stages because they are identified early. So I think that's one thing we really should advocate for. If that can be made a priority for our governments, for funders, then yes, we would be making some headway with cervical cancer. And then we should also make treatment affordable. We're talking about affordability. We all know that there is the screening method, the HPV DNA, which Dr. David talked about. It is available, but it is not affordable. So maybe investing in that technology and making it more affordable, more accessible and more affordable across the continent would be one good way to start. Talking about treatment for those who have already gotten to who already have to deal with the disease right now or who have to treat it, we should get treatment closer to the people. We are making efforts, but we need to multiply, intensify this effort. I know that there are instances of mobile clinics, there are instances of interventions through SMS where people are reminded maybe to do their tests or to go for treatment or things like that. We have these things happening, but on a very limited scale. If we can ensure that these services are taken to all the corners of the continent. Look at what happened. I'll give the malaria case again. Because partners were serious with malaria, they ensured that people got mosquito bed nets. I know of places where there were so many bed nets and people did not know what to do with them. Some even started using them to attach with their fishing nets. You see, so there was a lot of resources put in for malaria, and then the necessary preventive tools were provided. We can do same with cervical cancer. And it is true, it is expensive, but the good thing here is it involves only women, and it involves only women of a certain age, you see? Why not invest in these women, target the age group, invest in them, and we can do with it once and for all. So I'm making this plea so that governments hopefully can hear me, international donors, partners, developmental partners, development partners can hear this and take it upon themselves to make eradication of cervical cancer a priority. It is doable, but it is not a priority. That's the problem we have. If they make it a priority, then we can get serious with this and eradicate this scourge, cervical cancer. For the messages, well, we've mentioned them already. We need to debunk the myth that we've talked about cervical cancer today. People need to understand, know the truth, and not necessarily associate cervical cancer to things that are not exactly what they think they are. In other words, I'm simply saying that we should ensure that people are sensitized on what exactly cervical cancer is, so that before they say anything, they can be informed about their actions, their behavior towards cervical cancer patients, and that could just make your world a much better place. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Caleb, for those powerful points you've already given us. I'm not sure if Datari or Sally or Sabi would like to say anything else before we end.
I would like to tell the people, if you guys have any issue on gynecology, oncology, you can contact me or contact and let's not be scared to do screening. Let's not be scared. You can preach the word for screening. Preach screening so that we can. Otherwise, I would like to say to everyone, good night. Caleb, that was a really good presentation. Thank you. What to you?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Daktari. We'll keep preaching. You know, even if you go to churches, they preach maybe one thing over and over again until, you know, people implement, people understand it better. So we shall not relent. We'll continue preaching, screening, preaching vaccination, and together we'll eliminate cervical cancer. So thank you very much. Thank you, Caleb. Thank you, Daktari. Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Sabi.
Thank you. Thank you, Valerie. I also just want to use the opportunity to thank Being Africa for inviting me to be part of this initiative to be the speaker for today. And thank you as well, Dr. David, for your kind words on my presentation for today. Thank you. And thank you all, Sally, Sabi, for your contributions. Thank you also to the many listeners we had today, and the many more we will be having when this program, who will be listening to this program subsequently, because I know it's of course going to stay on this space. Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup, Caleb. Yes, so thank you everyone for joining this space tonight. And I'd just like to say that we go ahead and implement all that we've had. Talk to someone today, talk to someone each and every time about cervical cancer, and let's normalize this conversation. Let's keep preaching prevention, because it's always better than cure anyway. Yeah, so with that, I'd like to also thank Achieng for hosting, for making this possible every other Wednesday. And we really appreciate all the knowledge you're getting here, actually free of charge. Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And welcome, Achieng.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Valerie. And thank you, everyone. Thank you, Daktari. Thank you, Caleb. Thank you, Sally, Sabi, and Valerie for being such a good moderator to this discussion. And the reason as to why we host these spaces is one of the main things that we are trying to achieve is normalization of discussion or conversations about cervical cancer, which will help us beat the stigma that we've identified as a major impediment to women seeking screening services, women seeking treatment services, and also seeking support. So every Wednesday we'll keep hosting these spaces, and if there is any topic that you'd like us to discuss, feel free to chat, share the message on chat. Feel free to reach to us on our various social media platforms, and we will gladly bring in the speakers that you'd like us to host on the space. And together we believe that we can eliminate cervical cancer. And indeed, what is coming out clearly is cervical cancer is one of those cancers that is 100% preventable, 100% treatable. And that's why Daktari, Caleb, and every other speaker keeps on talking about screening, because if it is detected early, it is easily treatable, and we can all join up the space and speak as survivors, just as Sally has talked about. So I see our time is far much spent. I would just want to welcome you once again for the space next Wednesday, but feel free to keep the conversation going through our online platforms. If you need to reach to Daktari, feel free to reach out to Valerie, or you can also reach out to Being Africa, and Daktari is also available for you. You can always get in touch. Until next Wednesday, I wish you good night. Let's keep it her reason for being. And even as we engage on social media, our hashtag is her reason for being. And if you've not followed Being Africa, feel free to follow us and let's keep the conversation going. Good night, everyone. God bless you.